The following is a paid presentation. The views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of Shiawassee Radio.
This is your cell. This is your bunk.
This is the Jail Visit on Shiawassee Radio, live from the Cofield Oil and Propane Studios. Here's attorney Bill Amadeo.
Excited about this one?
Yeah,
Bill. All right, we are live. I am Bill Amadeo from McManus Amadeo and Grable and Associates, and I have had a weird week, and I am so behind on content. I'm doing this lifting twice a day, my mental health therapy. It's going well. I only almost beat one client's ass this week.
I was gonna say, it's better than
The live audience expanded here.
Almost sold out.
Wow, all right. What do you think of those Democrats? So anyway, I'm going to talk about Judge Julie Nicholson today, who's recently resigned, and we're going to talk about Fight Club 2002 in South Jersey, and boy, was that an interesting time for me. You think I'm crazy now? You should have known me 22 years ago. That would have been a scene. All right, let's talk about Judge Nicholson. You know, here's my biggest memory of her. It was during COVID. And somebody contacted me to do a compassionate release. Because when the COVID hit jails and prisons, there were compassionate releases being done. And this individual did not have the money to pay, but I felt bad. And, you know, you were home. You were working some, but, I mean, I was taking my files home, and you were stuck in the house. I felt bad. This poor guy had COVID. They wanted to release him from the Oakland County Jail. And I asked, what was he in for? He was in for driving while suspended, second offense. Now, let me explain something to you non-criminal lawyers out there. You don't go to jail for driving while suspended. What generally happens is the prosecutor, if they have a heart or a brain, will give you time to correct your license. Then they hit you with a civil infraction. That's not what happened in Oakland this time. So the guy self-surrendered, and she gave him 1 year in jail for driving while suspended. So his wife calls me, and I do this compassionate release. Jessica Cooper is the prosecutor back then, who, miserable human being. Karen McDonald eventually beat her. A lot of drama went into that. But I do this compassionate release. Charge code 8273. What's that mean, Mike? I do this compassionate release, and she denies it. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I appealed her denial to the circuit court, and the press called me and said, hey, you did a compassionate release? And yep, I did. Kim Russell calls me up. We're doing an interview. And I say what a disgrace it was that this judge even put this man in jail in the first place. Now he's got COVID. And then the prosecutor's office, they let him out. They let him out because the press and the media. So now, Judge Julie Nicholson, this is a woman who literally was locking people up for driving illegally while being sober. And here's the problem with this stupid law. If you don't have a driver's license, you're not going to get around. Your only choice will be to drive illegally. So we should make it easier for people to get their license back. If you want to restrict the license, that's fine, but you take somebody's ability away to feed their family, to get to work. For what?
Not like we have like a huge metro system or anything.
No.
It's not New York City.
Now, if it's New York City, it's not that big a deal, right?
Right.
I drove in New York. People thought I was nuts. Yeah. You know, because you don't need to drive in New York. You do need to drive in Michigan.
Right.
So, I mean, it completely. And I don't know what to say. I've heard rumors about why she resigned. And I don't know if the rumors are true or not. But I will say this. I thought she was a miserable human being from the experience I had with her. Miserable human being. Your chance of winning a prelim with her was about as good as my chance of becoming a hair model. It's not going to happen. You may find me attractive, that's because you like bald men. Right? I got no hair. We understand. Jesus Christ. I mean, this is the type of person who would raise your bond for running a prelim. That's what this person would do. I have no love for Julie Nicholson. I don't like the woman. And if she did commit a crime, I hope whoever her judge is provides the same mercy she provided to the defendants in Oakland County. Miserable human being. Let's talk about Fight Club. First rule of Fight Club, you don't talk about Fight Club.
We don't talk about Fight Club.
Which is also the second rule of Fight Club. All right, guys. Listen. There's been some peaks and valleys in my life, right? I mean, you know, there's been some good times, some bad times. Oh, God. I remember tutoring at Cooley. That was a step away from the clock tower. But, yeah. 2002. Let's kick it back to then. When the movie Fight Club came out, this was not good for the people in New Jersey. They took this thing to heart way too much.
They didn't have the disclaimer back then.
No! Try this at home, right? Because next thing you know, these idiots were doing these fight clubs. And let me tell you about fight clubs. This is where lost souls went to try to find souls. Okay, this is like people finding a new religion. Like, beyond crazy born-again Christians, like, throwing holy water in your face. You gotta believe! Okay. So when Fight Club came out, you know, I mean, these Fight Clubs started popping up. People thought they were Ed Norton and Brad Pitt. I mean, people were beating the shit out of each other in warehouses. Now, in 2002, I applied to the Widener Trial Admission Program, and I got denied. And I thought, law school's done. I can't get in. Because this was a program anybody should have got into. We learned later in time that they already knew who they were taking. They were just getting tuition from you. Like, they were taking A, B, and C who knew people. You weren't getting in, but thanks for giving us money for 6 weeks. That was a game, right? And I will tell you, everybody from that program that got in, they're really lighting the world on fire. If you need a court-appointed lawyer for a parking ticket, call two of them. But I am at a real low peak. And you know, when you're at that low peak, crazy things can happen. That's when you start, like, saying risky things make sense. This is when you start betting a lot on a game or throwing caution to the wind. And you get that fuck it attitude. I had that fuck it attitude in 2002. Now, I'd get into Cooley in 2004, but right after the rejection from Widener, I am bartending at Tropicana. I'm working at the union. I am writing on the side. I'm supporting my family, my aunt, my mom, and I'm thinking I lost my dream. And this is just a bad time period. And what do you do during bad time periods? You have a lot of meaningless sex. Kind of happens, right? I mean, thank God I got into law school. I think a third of New Jersey would have hooked up with that. It was not a good time. This was before the Kara Wiseman of the world came, okay? These were a lot of crazy women. And you got, like, the no filter going on right now. I'm not getting to law school. I'm bartending. I'm not in great shape. I am losing my mind. The dream is gone. And let's just take some shots. And there was this one girl. And this girl was cray-cray. And everybody knew she was cray-cray, but she was very pretty. Now, under normal circumstances, like when I was getting into law school, you stayed away from this person. I'm like, oh yeah, she's nuts. But failing to get into law school, she became very appealing. Like, huh, look at her with different lights. Because you start wondering, is this where I'm at? Is this my surroundings now? Is this my crew? And if this is, okay, let me make the most of this bullshit.
Yeah, it's a thought of,
hands I've been dealt? Right. Let me play the hand. So I went up to her and I said, hey, let's go out. And she goes, wow, you just came at me like that. I'm like, yeah. She says to me, well, let's go out, pick me up. I know you don't drink. I want to drink. I said, okay. But she goes, I want you to wear sweatpants. sweatpants, and sneakers. Now, she was kind of a rock climber, which went with her crazy inside. You know, okay, she's going to take me to a rock climbing thing. There we go. Woohoo! So she goes, I want to see what you got tonight. Now, it wasn't really an enticing invitation as you might think. We go to this dirt road, and this is before GPS. I mean, I get lost. Like, all right, tell me where to make the turn. Now, she's drinking in the car, and she's laughing, and I keep going down this dirt road, and we go to Hamilton. Hamilton's the farmland in New Jersey. You don't know. There is farmland in New Jersey. I think it's the blueberry capital of the world, actually. They brag about their blueberries. You go 50 miles outside of AC, eat some blueberries. You stay in the city of AC, you get shot. You know? So, blueberries were getting shot. But we go to this warehouse. I don't know what the hell's going on. Now, mind you, under normal circumstances, I'm not going near this situation. She's nuts. It's this dark area in the woods. When you walk in, you hear all these screams. Ah! So I'm looking around. Go up these stairs, and there's these guys beating the shit out of each other. And this guy comes to you, and he goes, who are you? And you tell him your name. And she goes, he's with me. She was a regular there. This is like where she took her dates. Now, I don't know if she wanted to see her date get his ass kicked or do well fighting. Now, I'm like at this crossroads right now. Okay, shit, now I'm an Atlantic City kid. I mean, if you challenge me to a fight, I have to. It's better to lose a fight than run from a fight.
One of the rules of Fight Club, if it's your first time at Fight Club,
you gotta fight. You got no choice. So I tried that. Like, hey, you know, do you mind if I just watch tonight? You know the rules! Because we all saw the goddamn movie, right? So it's like, oh, shit. And these guys were living this gimmick, man. They were, like, into it. And I won't tell you who was there because there was a code. You don't tell who was there, but I will give you some vague examples. Casino dealers. Senators. Union executives. Drug dealers. They all came to the secret side to beat the shit out of each other. And she said, I got something exciting for you. And my name's on the wall. She signed me up for a fight. And I am fighting this guy who's 3 times my size. And we were like the 6th fight, right? So I go up to him, like, hey, how's it going? I'm looking like, this guy's going to fuck me up, man. That's not good. And I'm sizing him up. Now, there was a bar there. So I said, well, listen, this is my first time. Let me buy you a drink. Let me tell you. I bought him and the girl I was dating. They were, like, trying to drink each other under the table. And I'm like, if I get this guy drunk enough, I might have a shot to win this fight. And I said to him, so, do you want another shot? You're damn right I do, you little bitch. Ha ha ha. And he's drinking them. Now, the guy, his arms are like tree trunks, right? It's like, this is not good for me. And I don't know. We finally call our fight, and he's toast. He's drunk off his ass, and he's throwing these haymakers at me, and even drunk, it was, like, painful, but I'm ducking, I'm diving, and I don't know, and I did, like, this kamikaze thing where I jumped up in the air, and I'm, like, hitting him on top of the head and throwing an elbow, and somehow I win, you know, because he was drunk, he was dizzy, you know, a little on top, and they tap out, and I'm like, oh my god, I won this huge fight. She's really impressed, and, I'd like to tell you I didn't go back there, but I did. So, every Tuesday night for a month, which felt like years, I went back to Fight Club. Now, I never won another fight, but I was respectable. And the people that were in the Fight Club, you'd see them in normal situations, and it was a casino executive comes into Diamond Gyms, and you saw him at Fight Club, and you nodded at each other, and it was...
Right.
We can't say shit. You gotta understand that these guys, this was like their version of golf, getting away from their families. I couldn't stand, like, going to Fight Club. But nobody knew where they were going. And then, I'm trying to get McCooley. And I'm going back. I'm trying to get into Rutgers. I want to stay close to home. Rutgers is rejecting me. And me and this girl stopped seeing each other. But for some reason, I kept going to the fight club. Now, this is where you really are concerned that maybe you need a competency, right? But I start really enjoying fighting. And I've learned a lot of failed boxers went to this fight club. I'm a failed boxer. But this was different. You know, like MMA guys, they know what they're doing. Boxers know what they're doing. These were guys in a cold warehouse in New Jersey just pounding on each other. This was not good. But your mindset, this is what's dangerous. I think I'm a pretty strong person, mentally and physically, but if you do something enough, you become part of that situation. And then you got to break away from that situation. And for a while, I was in the secret society of fight clubbing. It wasn't healthy. It wasn't good. But, you know, you go through these, like, roller coasters. First of all, you say, okay, I can't stop going now because I got to be tough. Then it's like you want to go because you're feeling this void in your life, which was like getting to law school. Then you just aggravate the world, so you're going. Then there's a guy you don't like, you're going to fight that night. Like, okay, well, I can do it legally or quasi-legally here.
Legally.
I will say that my fight club brothers, I'm Facebook friends with many of them, and they're probably shitting themselves right now. They tune and say, oh, was he going to mention me? I'm not going to mention anybody's name. I'm sad to say I was there. But we do have bro code. What's really interesting, though, guys, is the women that would show up. Like, local New Jersey women would come like this was an enjoyable thing. It's like crazy women that were going to watch wrestling in the late 70s and they thought it was real. This was real, unfortunately.
Wait, it's not real?
Hey, so, as we will learn later in life, I do get into law school and things change and I'm no longer part of fight clubs, but I had my moment. Miss on. So, I will say this. If I'm on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm picking Julie Nicholson or Fight Club. Fight Club was less frustrating than her.
The jail visit with attorney Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo. Connect with McManus and Amadeo at McManusAmadeo.com or call 800-392-7311. This is the jail visit on Shiawassee Radio.
You'll notice my Cooley shirt. This is the version of Last Chance You for law school.
I thought it was Cooley.
We got we got a letter from Cooley today. And apparently our old law school is trying to sell us life insurance. What the hell is happening here? Did you hear that? Evaluate your needs with this enclosed brochure. 20-year term life insurance is most popular for you under 65. Is Cooley selling law life insurance?
No, it's something I said. Somebody reached out.
You know, we were talking about confessions today. What up, Joe Bear? What about confessionals today? I gotta tell you. Horrible stories about confessionals as a Catholic. Because I grew up with confessionals. And what terrified me about confessionals as a kid, remember something, guys? I was an altar boy for years. Then I worked in a rectory, which is where the priest lived. And
wait a minute. Priests live in the rectum?
The priest lived in the rectory.
Oh, rectory.
The rectory is the house for the priest.
Excuse me, I thought anatomy.
No. The nuns lived in the convents.
Well, that's something.
Which was a block away. You're right, Mike. I might need insurance if those two guys show back up. Somebody's talking about the trial next week.
Bob and Ken?
Oh. Well, they weren't employees of the Washoe County Prosecutor's Office, right? Mike, what prosecutor's office did those two work for? I'm curious. No, well, okay. Hey, Brian Lundy. What's up? Everybody's coming out for this one today.
They're in confessions.
So here was the thing about confessions. And Mike, you could relate this as a Catholic. I would, you know, go to confession, and then I'd work at the rectory. And all the priests would sit around, they'd be drunk at the dinner table. They'd be telling about people's confessions. Ah, I bet you didn't actually spit with screwing Bob Carpenter. I'm like, oh my God! Like, she told these people these things. I made up the names, but they told people these things in the confessional. And the priests are sharing them. So, like, you know, I'd go to confession after this. Like, I'd walk in the church. They say, what have you done since your last confession? Well, I've done nothing against your will since I walked into this church 5 minutes ago. Other than that, oh my God. Yeah, if you cursed, you'd be like 10 Hail Marys and Our Fathers. I mean, imagine if they really knew.
Penalties are a lot lighter today.
It was horrible. I remember it was like horrifying learning that priests were sharing confessions outside the confessional. Well, yeah, as a strong Catholic, like, oh, this is serious stuff.
Did the judges do that?
Neither here nor. Depends what county you're in, sir. God. Is there a judge that's not pissed off at me right now? Like some.
Maybe in the second or third circuit?
God, Mike used to lie in confessions. Yeah, Mike, I used to lie to my mental health professional. I didn't want that woman knowing about me.
Tell those people the truth.
God, I'm not going to share what's really going on in my mind. It's been enough I do these lies about her.
If you watch closely.
If you watch closely to what I say on my podcast, you will be highly concerned. Oh, I forgot my metro. Hi, I'm Bill Amadeo from McManison Amadeo and Grable. So should I do that already?
You already did. Now I'm worried.
I'm really stressed about Monday.
I got a flak jacket. You
weren't. All right, today we're going to talk about something that happened the summer of my sophomore year of high school. And I was thinking of the song I Remember You by Skid Row. Remember that song? It's a great song, I Remember You. And in that song, something I couldn't relate to is there's this poor homeless guy, right? And this homeless guy is carrying on these pictures of this girl he was in love with back in the day. She was a really pretty girl, and he was a young, good-looking guy, and now he's homeless. Well, a series of bad decisions occurred. Started with her. So what I think happened is she left him for like a guy from the suburbs or something, and he, poor guy, lost it. And I remember feeling so bad for this guy, like, oh man, this poor guy's holding on to this memory as he's looking to get keyed in a trash can. I also thought to myself, dude,
he didn't look around.
Get over this shit, right? I don't care how good looking she was, this is ridiculous. Stop.
Yes.
Okay, and moral to the story here. Guys, if a woman leaves you, I promise you, you can find someone cooler and better looking around the corner. You just gotta look.
My hypothesis fails.
My God! 2 and 2 could equal 22. If she's really smart, everybody's stuck on the 2 and 2 equals 4. Could you imagine, like, becoming homeless and losing your dreams because this girl left you?
Oh, it's not in his
headstone. I mean, and the poor guy, if he looked her up today, okay, this is like 1989, right? On Skid Row, when they wrote that song. Today on Facebook, we would see that. She may not look the same in 2024. I assure you, she has aged. Okay.
And that man today is a county prosecutor.
And that man became a prosecutor. So, in all seriousness, summer after sophomore year of high school, right before mock trial hit, and I'm trying to find myself, right? And you're learning at Atlantic City High School what a caste system we had. the Atlantic City and the poor kids were on one side, and the veterinary market kids were on the other side, and, you know, it was divided not just among race, but social economics. And, you know, as I'm coming full circle with stuff, I still see things divided amongst social economics and race at times. Like, things didn't change. Somebody wrote this script. Like, some of us jumped into a different system, but at AC High, it was prototypical Scott Grableson Mark 8 rules. Fuck you. But, you know, I really want it to have a badass junior year of high school as far as baseball went. And after work, I used to go to Baton Rouge Avenue, which was this beach block on Vetner, right after Atlantic City. And on Baton Rouge, there were these sand dunes. So like a maniac, I used to run up and down the dunes. Like I was training. And I would do this till I was like puking. Like, you know, like you're doing suicide on the basketball court. I run up and down these dunes. The dunes were my thing. I felt safe there. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm working out. And then I would read and write poetry. All things that were really normal for a white kid in the hood. And in Baton Rouge, you were safe enough. And one day, my world changed. And let me tell you about her. There's always a girl in this story, right? And this girl... This girl was trouble. But let me explain what happened. Let's just call her Samantha. Is that a good name? Good fake name for her. So, Samantha is this beautiful Latina girl who was from the hood. And why was she even walking on the beach in Baton Rouge? I don't know. But I am laying, I'm sprawled out, exhausted, just heaved. And Scott Grable, I'm giving a big shout to the peeps from the village. So, Samantha sees me. Now, let me tell you about Samantha. Samantha was cool as hell. She was that it girl, but she was ghetto. She was the girl, the 16-year-old, beautiful Spanish girl who had like a 28-year-old drug-dealing boyfriend. And you knew this boyfriend would kill you if he found out you were messing with her. And at this point of life, I didn't even think she'd be into me. I mean, I'm a little nobody. I'm running on the dunes. I'm this tiny little white kid with no money, and I'm trying to become a good baseball player. I had a knack for reading, except when those damn headaches hit from dyslexia. We'll get there another time, though. So I'm laid down there, and we start talking. We had this connection. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, maybe, I don't know, maybe the ghetto's not so bad, right? Like, if we just walk to Baton Rouge, this is amazing. Here's this beautiful girl. She's not from Margate or Ventnor, and she sees me for me. Now, mind you, I understand that she's got, like, this 28-year-old killer who she's dating. And she's trying to escape her home because there was a lot of dysfunction, molestation in the home. It was an ugly situation for her. And we clicked. And every night, we would hang out. And this was like one of your first kisses. And you're like in love. You're by the sand and the ocean. And you're listening to your headphones. And she's asking what you're listening to. And you're telling her Def Leppard and Skid Row. And she's listening. She's into the same music. Holy shit. This is it. And then... there's a turning point in this tale. So it turns out Samantha was a bit of a player. When I say a player, she liked a wide variety of boys. There was a 28-year-old drug dealer. There was the 15-year-old white kid who's displaced. And then there was this shooby. Now, for those who don't know what a shooby is, hey, Scott, let's give a shout out to the shoobies of the 90s. A shooby was a kid that came from Philadelphia and spent the summer at the shore. They used to call them shoobies because the joke was when they came, they used to put their lunch in a shoebox. Hence, they became a shooby. And this shooby's family had a house in Margate. He was a wealthy shooby. And him and her met at an arcade in Atlantic City. Now, this is what's fascinating about this shooby, because this shooby's ignorant to what's going on in Atlantic City. He was just going to the arcade. Those two hit it off. He wasn't your regular Margate kid. But in her variety of the guys she liked, there's the gangbanger who's an adult, who'd be charged with CSC3 all day today. There's the shooby who's in love with her. And there's me. I was just excited to kiss a girl back then. I didn't know what the hell was going on. And every night, I'd go work out. And she would come. Now, here's the thing about the shooby. She told me about how she was dating this guy. She said, I'm dating two guys, just so you know the story. I'm like, okay. You gotta understand something. At this point, this girl's the coolest thing in the world. You know what I mean? You're 15 years old. Here is this beautiful girl from your same area as you. And you don't really... You're putting everything to the side. Like, logic is not in your mind right now. Because you're thinking, this is my coming-of-age moment. This is so cool. The waves, the beach, the beautiful girl. Well, things would change pretty quickly. She told me she was dating the shooby. And I'm like, okay, whatever. And she told me about the guy who really was her boyfriend, the 28-year-old. Now, we knew who the 28-year-old was. This guy had a body count. When I say a body count, I don't mean hooked up with a lot of girls at frat parties and got sued civilly. What I'm saying is, this guy, he literally would kill people. He was a big-time drug dealer in Atlantic City, very well known at the time, Gary. And she viewed the 28-year-old guy as her escape. The shooby was the guy she liked, and I was the kid from Ducktown who she thought was intriguing. And she gave me this lesson in life. She was way ahead of me in life. And she said, you know, the way you're working out, the way you're climbing these dunes and reading, you're going to get out of here. You're going to be the one that gets out of here. She had this whole thing. You know, I said, we'll get out of here together. She's like, yeah, it's not going to happen for me. Like, she could tell her future right then and there. She says, I'm going to get pregnant. I'm going to never go to college. I'm going to do A, B, C, and D. Let's just enjoy this moment. Well, one day, we're at Baton Rouge. And we're just hanging out, talking. When I say hanging out and talking, let me tell you guys, there was nothing sexual here. I was a kid. An innocent kid who was just clueless to the world. And the shooby shows up. He followed her. He was tracking her. And he is screaming in my face. Now, at this point, I'm a kid from the hood. I'm a long way from the assholes of St. James. I'm sitting there like, okay, well, fuck you. Let's go. We're in each other's face. And she's screaming at me, B, listen, don't worry. I'll talk to him. But then, you know that story, three is a crowd? Well, what the hell is four then? It was one thing when the shooby and I were going at it. It was another thing when the 28-year-old boyfriend showed up. Now, I don't know if she had a roadmap where all these fucking guys were following her. But there's four of us on this beach. There is me, the little 15-year-old white kid. There's Samantha, the beautiful Spanish girl from Atlantic City. There is, let's just call him Craig, the white shooby from Margate / Philly. And there is the 28-year-old gangbanger. And there's a lot of screaming going on. And the shooby boy, he's crying. I love her. I'm ready to die for her. the drug dealer who's showing a gun. So I'm going to make your wish come true. And I'm thinking to myself, damn. This is what I get for kissing a girl from a neighbor. I got to get the hell out of here. This was not good. So, drug dealer, he shoots. Doesn't hit anybody. It's like a scare tactic. But he, like, shoots into the dunes. And, like, you could hear, like, a cannon. You ever heard a gunshot up close? It is like a cannon that goes off. And he's screaming at both of us. And she's crying, put the gun down, put the gun down. Long story short, we escape. And drug dealer basically says to us, you guys have an option right now. We could fight for her, or you could throw in the towel. The Shuby boy said he was willing to die to be with her. I thought to myself, I'm going to get the hell out of here and live another day. Just look, I will fight anybody. When I see a gun, I want a whole ass. So I convinced the Shuby guy, hey, we should both leave right now. At this point, Samantha is flirting with her 28-year-old boyfriend, telling him he's the only one. And you understand something. While you may deem her as a player, she was trying to hook us up right now, too. Yes, she put us in this situation, but she's trying to get us out of the situation. I convinced the Shuby guy to leave with me. And I convinced the 28-year-old drug dealer that that was his girl, and they're going to be happy together. And me and the Shuby boy got the hell out of there. And we escaped that night. And I'm thinking to myself, Jesus Christ. Is this really happening? So, long story short, let me give you a spoiler alert what happened with these four people. The 28-year-old young man at the time, who is now, I guess he's 60 now, he has been in and out of the New Jersey Department of Corrections for years, but he's still alive. Probably a shot caller in prison. The Shuby guy has led a really sad existence. I had to look him up today. I Facebooked him, and I thought of the song I Remember You, because for two reasons. One, that was one of the songs her and Samantha and I listened to, and two, he has selfies with her today. And she's got kids, which I'm assuming with the guy is in prison. But this guy, he's like working a menial job, and he's still like clinging on to the girl from the hood who he was in love with. And I went a different direction. She called me, like, 6 months after the fact, hey, can we hang out? And I just, I'm really tied up. And I see her on Facebook today, and I see selfies with him and those prison photos. You know those prison photos? They go there and they smile. And that was the story of how I escaped Baton Rouge.
No cops came.
No cops came! Dude, I never saw one cop!
The jail visit with attorney Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo. Connect with McManus and Amadeo at McManusAmadeo.com or call 800-392-7311. This is the jail visit on Shiawassee Radio.
Lately, I've been asked about stories from Ducktown. This one is beyond uncomfortable. But, you know, I also look at it like this one kind of helped mold me. And I'm going back to 1992. And I was listening to Spotify today. I'm working on some questions for a very big case. I'm so worn out. Just worn out. And certain songs could just bring you to a different place. And there were two songs that hit me hard today. One was Enter Sandman, and the other was Nothing Else Matters. And they were by Metallica, 1992. And I guess the only way to really tell this story is to attempt to be truthful. And when I say attempt to be truthful, I want to be as real as I can from what I can remember. And we'll take it from there. I'm Bill Amadeo from McManus and Amadeo and Grable and Associates. And this is content for the jail visit, and I need to always put that in first. Maybe that'll break some of the tension. And this one I feel tense about. But it was 1992, and I'm a kid in high school. And the Black Album came out. The Black Album was some of Metallica's finest work. And I went to the music shop at Ocean One, and I bought the Black Album. It was $12. Big money back then. And I'm playing on my cassette. And kids from the 90s can tell you that we played on our cassettes till it popped. And we'd have a way of taking it back so we wouldn't lose the tape. And the Black Album meant a lot to me. But it's hard to listen to the Black Album today. And as I'm working on this case, I'm always going to have my headphones on, right? My headphones are in. And I'm listening to the Black Album. And I get this nauseous feeling. And this angry feeling. And I don't know why at first. The mind is amazing how it could block stuff out. But somewhere in our subconscious, every story lives. For better and for worse. Our happiest memories are here, and the repressed memories are here. And sometimes they come out to the front. And today, in the middle of writing a 100-question cross-examination, this DuckTale memory came out. And I'll be honest with you, tonight I almost canceled the live because I didn't want to talk about it, but then I also wrote it down the best I could. I think I have to talk about it because who am I if I don't be real about stuff, right? So, I'm on the bus, New Jersey Transit, and a lot of things happen on public transportation. A lot of stories about New Jersey Transit and the Jitney hit hard. And what happened is when you went on the bus, you had to put on this persona, right? So here was the persona. You had a hoodie on, backwards baseball cap. Your earphones in, and you sat in the back of the bus. And you listened to your music, and you looked out the window. One eye is looking out the window, the other eye is looking for trouble because you don't know what's going to happen on this bus sometimes. But it was how you had to get home because the family didn't have a car. Couldn't afford a cab. The bike didn't always work. So it's raining, and it felt like the rain was crashing against the bus, right? I don't know, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. And this other white kid's on the bus. And we know each other. I won't mention his name, because I don't know what this day has done to him or for him or against him. We don't talk anymore. We see each other under people you may know on Facebook. And when I saw him the other day, it kind of made me think about this. So, we're on that bus. four guys get on the bus. And if you are an inner city kid, you could taste trouble. It comes at you. You could feel it. You could sense it. And I'm not talking about the trouble where a judge wants to scold you or a prosecutor talks shit about you. I'm talking about the kind of trouble where you know it's life or death. And these four guys get on the bus. And they're looking at me. Look at the other white kid. And they're talking real loud. And it was one of those fight or flight moments, if you would. You can sense it. And it was weird because the first track on the Metallica Black album was Enter Sandman. And to this day, I will listen to Enter Sandman before I do a closing and a trial. Something about that song always gave me energy. But after the energy, there's this drop. And I didn't know why there was such a drop, but I always like use it like somebody using a shot of steroids. Enter Sandman. But I always know after I listen to the song, I want to go to sleep. Nothing Else Matters is track 8. And it's one of the saddest songs you ever heard. And I can't really listen to Nothing Else Matters much anymore. It gets to me. And it's because of this day. I'm listening to Enter Sandman and The Unforgiven and Wherever I May Roam and all these cool tracks. But when I see these four guys, Nothing Else Matters comes on. And it felt like this 4-minute song was a lifetime. Because now you're studying the room. In this case, you're studying the bus. And they're looking at you. They're looking at the other kid. And the one guy takes his right hand and he puts it in his pants and he kind of, you know, he's starting to pleasure himself, if you would. And the one guy pulls out a knife. And you can sense either me or this other poor kid or both of us are going to be in for a world of hurt. And you try to play it off. You try to fake it. And your mind's going a million miles an hour. It's like all these thoughts. You see your life before your eyes. And there's escape routes going through your head. And you know what they want to do to you. And at that moment, you kind of know what they're going to do to you. It's going to go down. And you think a few things to yourself. One, am I ever going to see my animals again? Two, if somehow I make it to my house in Ducktown, are they going to come to the house and hurt my family? And I don't know. And is it better just to succumb to this and let shit just go down the way it's going to go down? Because I'd rather it hurt me than hurt my loved ones. Can I fight through this? Can I escape? And I got my backpack on my right shoulder. I got my headphones in. And you're trying to pretend you don't notice what's going through their minds. And guys, you could read their minds in this goddamn moment. And I look at the other kid. And I could see he's like trying not to cry. This is it for us. And I want to tell him, dude, don't show fear right now. You can't. Because if you show fear, it's going to hurt you. And you know, as I thought about that day, and I bring it back to 2023, I think it's tough for me to relate to people who have never been physically brutalized or emotionally brutalized. The people that have never really had that fight or flight moment, the people who have tiptoed through the raindrops, if you would. I just can't relate to that, man. How can anybody who hasn't been through the third layer of hell understand what the third layer of hell is? And I don't know if you could hold it against them, but can you really connect with them? And that's why when people have bad work ethic, it just kind of sickens me. But here we are. Because I know where I came from, which was that bus ride. I know where I'm at, which is Ann Arbor. And there's always that fear I could go back there. But here we are, and this kid, this frail kid, he's scared. And I walk towards the front of the bus. And I'm thinking, I need a lifeline right now, right? What am I going to do? And as I walk towards the front, he's sitting there, and I elbow him. And I'm thinking, if I cause a distraction, maybe that will save us. So I elbow this kid in the back of the head, thinking maybe he comes at me, it will cause a commotion, something will happen. And the poor guy doesn't say anything, and he's still like trying to fight back the tears. And I look at him, and I'm like nodding my head, like, no, bro, don't let them see you cry. Because if they see you cry, and we make it out of this, you're going to be a punk the rest of your goddamn life. So now it's time to be a fucking man. And I walk up to the front of the bus, and I could feel them walking behind me. And in some ways, I feel good about this, because now I'm the target. At least that poor idiot who I elbowed in the back of the head, he's going to be okay for at least today. And I took some solace in that, even at 15 years old, thinking, well, at least I helped him. And I whispered to the bus driver, this guy named Kevin, who I knew, said, hey, they're going to hurt me. Help me. And he looked at me, he goes, get the fuck off my bus. Okay. So I get off the bus. And I'm trying to play it cool and they're right behind me. And I throw an elbow to one as they start surrounding me. And I kind of kicked one in the balls and I start running. And Metallica's blaring in my head. And I got my backpack on my shoulder. I got the Walkman in my left hand. And I am running down Mississippi and down Georgia Avenue. And I am feeling this is it. And I could feel them on me. And Metallica's blaring in my ears. And I don't know what happens at this point, really. I remember I never ran so fast in my life. I remember jumping over fences, and somehow I get home. And as I get home, I turn around and I don't see them. And I'm out of breath. And my dog is waiting for me. Odie's waiting for me. Good old Odie. May he rest in peace. What a great dog. And Odie jumps out in front and he's growling and barking. Like he's trying to protect me. But I don't see anybody behind me. And I lay on the porch in exhaustion. I'm petting my dog. And he's like protecting me. And I'm worried that they're going to come to the house. And that was it. Now, let me be clear. I don't know if that's the entire story. I'm not sure. What I'm trying to do is share what I remember. Because the brain is amazing. Somewhere in here, the whole tale is there. But it's also not. So as I hear the Metallica Black Album today, I feel strong. I feel powerful. I feel brilliant. and I feel like I'm lying to the world. Because I can envision certain things. The kid I elbowed, I see where he's at today, and it's sad. I don't know if he lived his whole life in fear or shit just went wrong. The guys who were going to utilize me, believe they're dead. My dog is such a protector, and I think that's one of the reasons I love animals so goddamn much, because I always look to them for peace and salvation. And Odie having no fear, that's something. But when Nothing Else Matters comes on, I don't want to listen to it anymore. So when people say you forgot where you came from, I wish. All right. That's enough for tonight. Have a good night, guys.
The proceeding was a paid presentation by McManus and Amadeo PLLC. Listeners of this program should contact their attorney to obtain advice with respect to any particular legal matter. No listener should act or refrain from acting on the basis of information within this program without first seeking legal advice from counsel in the relevant jurisdiction. Only your individual attorney can provide assurances that the information and your interpretation of it is applicable or appropriate to your particular situation. Listening to this program using any associated website or related links or resources does not create an attorney-client relationship between the listener and host, contributors, or contributing law firms. All liability with respect to actions taken or not taken based on the contents of this program are hereby expressly disclaimed. You and your loved ones deserve a criminal defense firm that believes that your life and freedom are worth fighting for. Matt McManus, Bill Amadeo, and the McManus and Amadeo team of attorneys, investigators, and case managers will take the lead with a vast knowledge and legal experience across the state of Michigan to get the best possible result for you. Learn more at McManusAmadeo.com. Schedule a free consultation 24/7 by calling 800-392-7311.